నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతిం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. నష్టప్రాయేషు భద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవతీ ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్ఠికీ. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 36 టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 2. రంభమానః ఖరతరం పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్య పుచ్చం వప్రాణి విషాణాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరన్ కించిత్ కించిచ్ శక్రన్ ముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. రంభమానః ఖరతరం పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్య పుచ్చం వప్రాణి విషానాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరన్ కించిత్ కించిత్ చక్రిన్ముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. రంభమానః ఖరతరం పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్య పుచ్చన్ వప్రాణి విషాణాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరన్ కించిత్ కించిత్ చక్రముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. రంభమానః ఖరతరం పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్య పుచ్చన్ వప్రాణి విషాణాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరన్ కించిత్ కించిత్ చక్రముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్ పుచ్చం వప్రాణి విషాణాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరం కించిత్ కించిత్ చక్రముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. రంభమానా ఖరతరం పదా చ విలిఖన్ మహీం ఉద్యమ్య పుచ్చం వప్రాణి విషాణాగ్రేణ చోద్ధరం కించిత్ కించిత్ చక్రిముంచన్ మూత్రయన్ స్తబ్ధలోచనః. रंभमानाथरतरं सदा च विलिखन् महि उद्यम्य पुच्छं वप्राणि विषाणाग्रेण चोदरन् किंचित् किंचित् चक्रमुञ्चन् मुचनं शब्दलोचनः.
लेडीज
रंभमानः खरतरम् उद्यम्य पुच्छन् वप्राणि विषाणाग्रेण चोद्धरन् किञ्चित् किञ्चित् चक्रमुञ्चन् मूत्रयन् स्तब्धलोचनः. रंभमानः खरतरम् पदा च विलिखन् महीम् उद्यम्य पुच्छं वप्राणि विषाणाग्रेण चोद्धरन् किञ्चित् किञ्चित् चक्रन्मुञ्चन् मित्रयन् स्तब्धलोचनः.
रंभमानः बेलोइंग खरतरम् मोस्ट हार्शली पदा विथ हिज हूव्स च एंड विलिखन स्क्रेपिंग महीम द ग्राउंड उद्यम्य raising upward pucham his tail vaprani the embankments vishana of his horns agrena with the tips cha and udharan lifting and tearing up kinchit kinchit a little shakrit stool munchan releasing mutrayan urinating stabdha glaring lochanaha his eyes. Translation: Arishta Sura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. Text 3 and 4. Yasya nirhadhi tenanga nishthurena gavam nrinam patantya kalato garbha स्रवन्ते म भयेन वै निर्विशन्ति घणा यस्य ककुद्यचल संकया तम तीक्ष्ण श्रृंगम उद्विक्ष्य गोप्यो गोपाश्च तत्र सुः. ट्रांसलेशन: माय डियर किंग, क्लाउड्स हावर्ड अबाउट शार्प हॉर्न्ड अरिष्टासुरस हम्प, मिस्टेकिंग इट फॉर अ माउंटेन. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Vedic literature categorizes miscarriages as follows. आ चतुर्धाद् भवेत् श्रावः पातः पञ्चम षष्ठयोः अत ऊर्ध्वं प्रसूतिः स्यात्. ट्रांसलेशन: अप टू द फोर्थ मंथ अ प्रीमैच्योर डिलीवरी इज कॉल्ड श्राव, इन द फिफ्थ एंड सिक्स्थ मंथ्स इट इज कॉल्ड पात, एंड आफ्टर दिस इट इज कंसिडर्ड अ बर्थ प्रसूति. ओमज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। So today we are studying from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 36th chapter entitled The Slaying of Arishta, the Bull Demon. So Arishtasura has entered the holy land of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a beautiful village with the river Yamuna, wonderful green, grassy mountains and mountain slopes, Giriraj Govardhan, beautiful forests with so many birds, beasts and humans taking shelter of Vrindavan. And this living entity was taken out the form of a huge, gigantic bull of the name Arishtasura, has entered this beautiful village, and out of his deep emotions and feelings towards Krishna, and therefore Krishna's friends, family and others related to him, he has these deep emotions of animosity, and he, the bull Arishtasura, even before he can actually meet up with Krishna, he wants to destroy that, or at least make a point of exhibiting his deep animosity. He is destroying the ecology of Vrindavan. Now generally, any refuse of humans or animals is helpful for vegetation. After some time, after a period of few days, it turns into manure. But then, it is not that one passes refuse wherever one feels like, and then say that, oh, it is going to be converted to manure, and therefore it is helpful for the ecology. This particular act exemplifies what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita as the demoniac nature. Basically, the Bhagavad Gita is describing two kinds of nature, and one has to choose sides with either one of them. Every living entity has to choose sides, either with the divine nature or the demoniac nature. The divine nature is that which is eco-friendly. The demoniac nature is that which is not. And even if the act, based on some speculative understanding, can be said to be helpful for the ecology, it is not. Here, the refuse that is being passed by this demon is not meant to help the town of Vrindavan. It is out of his sheer contempt for Krishna. And thus, it actually destroys the very ambience of the town of Braj or Vrindavan. The name Arishta in the Sanskrit dictionary has got an interesting meaning, or meanings rather. This particular word, Arishta, can be used as an adjective or a noun, either ways. But either ways, it means misfortune or problems, or it means a gift or something beneficial. It means both. So basically, how this word, in what context it is being used or applied, would define its meaning. Here the word is in conjunction with asura. Therefore, Arishta does not have any beneficial understanding to its meaning. Very interestingly, there are other places or other parts of the world where the word Arishta is used. It is not pronounced as Arishta, it can be pronounced Arista, which goes on to make up the word aristocratic or aristocrat. So just in case we meet someone who's named Arista or someone in that particular part of the world, it means the very best or something worshipable, high up there. However, in Vrindavan, in this context, it is to the contrary. So Arishtasura comes charging into Vrindavan because he feels that he can make a point. He feels that he is someone very powerful. He is someone who can create his own mark on society. Therefore he comes charging in. Here I am. Where are the drums? Where are the bugle horns? Come on, welcome me. So although he wants to exhibit himself as someone powerful, his intent is that which would cause pain to the recipient of his emotions. He does not want to benefit the residents of Vrindavan. He has come with an intent to cause pain to them. So how does Krishna respond? In the next verse, maybe tomorrow or day after, we are going to see that Krishna is, at this point of time, his God. Not at this point, he is always God. As God at this point of time, he simply decides to ignore Arishtasura. So Arishtasura is, you know, his constantly updating his Facebook profile. You know, I passed refuse here, I passed water there. On the Yamuna, this is where I am, you know. He's taking a selfie with his iPhone. With his iPad there, here, come on. But Krishna, there's no one who's, there's not even a single like there, you know. No one even pays attention to him, and this really gets to him. So he starts tearing up the embankments. I mean, a river with its embankments, where is it going to go? She's going to stay right there. What benefit will one get by tearing up the embankments? It's simply frustration. And why is the frustration there? Because no one is liking his Facebook profile. So then he decides to roar loudly, and his roar is filled with such terror that pregnant cows and a few pregnant women, they have miscarriages. And this is when Krishna feels enough is enough. As long as you are able, you are causing destruction that was, replaceable, I let you be. But now you're causing miscarriages. You cannot carry a baby again, the same baby, once it has miscarried. So this is when Krishna intervenes personally. He comes right. He stands right in the path of Krishna. And he gets a friend along. Some say it is Sridhama, some say it is Subala. These two names have significance. Dhamma means control of senses. So Sridhama means one who's perfectly controlled his senses. Bala means powerful. Subala means who's supremely powerful. So either one of them, Krishna is coming with them, with controlled senses or with supreme power. And he and his friend, they strike a pose. Krishna puts his left arm on his friend's shoulder. He has a flower in his fingers and is twirling it. Like in martial arts, especially when you're there in the movies or cartoons, he goes, come on, come towards me. Challenges him. Come. Now, Arishtasura is drawn towards Krishna, like fly towards fire. He feels, I'm so huge. My hump is hovering in the clouds. And look at Krishna. He is practically, he's not even able to, he's practically on the ground. Krishna is a 7-year-old boy. He feels I can crush him just with my breath. Or with my hooves, I'll cause the earth to tremble such that he'll simply be lost in the dirt. And Krishna very nonchalantly is just going on twirling his flower. Alright. It's as if, what to speak of me? Even this flower is not feeling any vibration. See? Still here in my fingers, twirling. So Arishta comes towards Krishna, and then Krishna, he teaches him a lesson. When Krishna decides to teach a lesson to a soul that is lost, in the sense the soul that has lost its real knowledge, understanding of who it is, it is like a software engineer who understands that this hard drive has so many bad sectors, it better be formatted. So Krishna completely formats that soul and lets it begin again. Now you can accumulate again whatever data you want on this drive. Start fresh. So Krishna basically is unsettling Arishtasura. Now, one of our spiritual teachers in a lineage of the name Bhaktivinod Thakur, he says that the activities of the Supreme Lord are known as pastimes, and these pastimes are basically of two types. They have two technical names. One is known as a nitya pastime, N-I-T-Y-A, nitya. Nitya means eternal. And the other is naimittik pastimes, N-A-I-M-M-I-T-T-I-K-A, naimittik. Naimittik comes from the word nimitta, that which is related to nimitta, or that which is a cause, causative. It's a via media or a reason for something to happen. So these are pastimes which exhibit or which become the via medium for some lessons to be learned. So the pastimes that are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are naimittika pastimes. And then there is a spiritual world beyond all this, so much that is happening in this material world, with the oceans rising, the global warming, and also people who are loving, caring, all these activities between the birds and the bee species vanishing, new species being discovered, although they were there, but being found, discovered. The world around us, beyond all of this colorful world, is an equally and much more enchanting world, that is a spiritual world. The information for which can only be had through the process of hearing from the pages of scriptures. So the activities in that realm are known as the Nitya pastimes or the eternal pastimes. The Naimittik pastimes allow us to relate to certain characteristics that we may embody individually or collectively. And understanding that, we can seek lessons and learn from them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out a subtlety, a very subtle point. He says, for the pastimes of the Lord to be understood, a basic qualification is necessary. And that qualification is that one must have understood and accepted the transcendental form and features, the nature of the Supreme Personality of God. We must know and understand the transcendental nature of God. And if one does not have these basic qualifications, then most of these activities, they appear to be folklores, they appear to be maybe someone's imagination, stories, definitely with some morals in them. It is like maybe 5 or 6 years back, there was a person outside a gate. He saw a devotee from the western part of the world walk out of the gate. So he came up to him and asked him, can I have some bakshish? So this particular gentleman took out 10 euros and gave it to the person who was asking for charity, gave it to the beggar there. The man looked at this piece of paper and thought, what did he give me? He had no idea what an euro meant. That currency, that piece of paper had no value for him. So looked at it, he thought that, what can I say? So just, then he turned to another person. I was right there. Then he turned, after some time, he turned to another person and said, see, he fooled me. He just gave me a piece of paper, printed paper. And he goes to the shop right in front of us and he says, what can I do with this? Will you like to take this? Now the shopkeeper knew about euros because he deals with us. He immediately said, yes, and I'll give you a bottle of milk for it, which was like 10 rupees. So unless and until one understands the transcendental nature of a euro, one thinks it is simply a piece of paper and considers it to be useless. Now the beggar is thinking, oh, just look at me, I'm so intelligent. Or maybe I put up such a show that the shopkeeper offered me a bottle of milk for free for a useless piece of paper. And the shopkeeper is thinking, I'm so intelligent. So unless and until, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is stating here, unless and until one understands the transcendental nature of God, of Krishna, then these pastimes will not give their full worth. There's a verse in the scriptures, Atashi Krishna Namadina Bhaved Grahiyam Indriye Sevan Mukhe Jivado Swayameva Spurtyada. This is in Sanskrit. It simply means that we have the senses allow us to access knowledge. However, with the senses that we presently have in the present state of existence, the senses allow us to access knowledge only on the material platform. But the same senses can access knowledge on the esoteric spiritual platform. All we have to do is give the senses that facility. Allow the senses to exhibit that quality. And the senses will only exhibit that quality if they undergo a process of purification. Gold from the mine is still gold. But if it undergoes a process of purification, if it goes through fire to a kiln, then a shine comes forth. That gold shines. Senses are definitely beneficial. However, when they go through the process of purification, then they really shine forth. They allow us to access spiritual knowledge or the spiritual platform. The process is definitely simple. The practice of the process can be a little complicated. It's a little complicated. The process is simple. Now, as a young child, when I was used to the when I was exposed to the education system in India, all they said is, you just have to study. Now that made sense. Okay, I just have to study. It's so simple, just study. S-T-U-D-Y. But then you get your course books. And all those, you have to study English, you have to study math, you have to study the sciences, social sciences, physical sciences. And the practice of the process is a little complicated. So there was this a small example to explain a point that I'll come to after that. A traditional multinational company, which had been there for decades, had an established bureaucratic way of functioning. I mean, really very strong bureaucracy. So the managers, they thought that in today's times it is very important that to increase the morale of or to encourage our workforce, let's have some competitive games with another company that is there as a competitor in the market, another company. So they had some negotiations with another MNC. And they said, let's have a rowing match. We'll have some players, some people who row canoes, boats, and two teams. So our bureaucratic MNC and the other MNC that really put a lot of emphasis on workers' contribution, they put together a team. The day of the match came. They had to row like 2 miles. And at the end of the competition, at the end of the match, the bureaucratic company, it lost by more than a mile. I mean, 2 miles that row across, and they lost by a mile. Now, this was the defeat, was an insult. So all the managers, they came together and they said, we have to understand how we were defeated, what was the cause of a defeat, and that too by a mile. How did we lose by a mile? And they went through discussions, understand this, that, various factors. They couldn't reach a conclusion. They said, all right, let us hire an outside company to do research on this. So they had another company to do research on why they lost. And they marked literally thousands of dollars for that research. And at the end of 6 months, the conclusion came to their desk. The conclusion was, the company which would put workers in the front, the cooperative company, they had nine people in the boat, one manager steering and eight rowing. Whereas the bureaucratic company had nine people in the boat, eight managers steering and one rowing. $6 and thousands of dollars. So now they knew what was the problem. Now what is the solution to this? So they all came together again. And they went through so many maneuvers, this and that, and understanding. They couldn't come to a conclusion. They hired another company. Spent another thousands of dollars. And finally the solution that was offered allowed them to compete in another match the next year. So the next year they again participated in the canoe competition, the rowing match. And this time the bureaucratic company lost by 1.5 miles. Because accepting the recommendations of the company that they had hired to give solutions, they understood that they had to properly allocate work. So this time out of 9 people in the boat, there are 4 steering managers and 4 area steering managers and 1 rower. And after the second loss, they were so disgusted that they laid off the rower and gave bonuses to all the managers for finding a solution to their problem. To actually coming together and finding what was the problem and finding a solution to the problem. They paid bonuses. Now this is a joke. The moral of this joke is, the process of purification of senses is simple, but we are so much bogged down by the bureaucracy of materialism that even when we are offered the option of proper allocation, it's within what we understand based on our material, you know, understanding, material knowledge, what we understand, we perceive. And the solution is not helpful. So, the scriptures, and especially when the Supreme Lord, through His activities, He comes and gives us His wonderful lessons, they want to encourage us to take up to the process of purification that actually is purifying. Because the process comes from a source that is pure, that does not have dualities in it. The one absolute truth. So these complications, as is stated, because of so much of baggage of materialism, these complications are technically known as anarthas. Artha means that which is beneficial, wealth, something that is, that helps us to progress. When the prefix ana is added in Sanskrit to any word, it means the opposite. So anartha means the opposite of that which is progressive, means regressive. So anarthas, they cause a consciousness to regress. And what is the result of a regressive kind of consciousness? Frustration, destruction, feeling of animosity, friction, hypocrisy, suspicion. This is regressive consciousness. So here, in this particular pastime, this bull represents, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, an anartha or a complication of attachment to and having pride in following a religion that has been established to propagate cheating. Once a boy, or let us say, there was a priest who came new to a town, new town. That was going to be his, the place where he would offer his services. And he had some urgent business at the post office. But he didn't know where the post office was. These are the days when there were no emails. You had to use the snail mail, the post office. So, he didn't know the directions of the post office. So, well, he thought, this is a small town, let me just walk around, also see this town and find the post office too. He couldn't find the post office. So finally at one particular corner, he found a young boy, a 9-year-old boy on his bicycle. So he called out to the boy and asked him, do you know the way to the post office? And the boy said, yes, you take this left and again you take a right and there right and there would you find the post office. He says, thank you, boy, and do you know who I am? He says, I don't. Well, I am your priest, the priest for this town. He said, well, welcome. Do you know what I can do for you? He says, no, I don't know. He says, I can teach you how you can go back to the kingdom of God. You don't say, really? Do you believe me? He says, no, I don't believe you. So why? Well, if you don't know the way to the post office, how do you know the way to back? To the kingdom of God. So the young boy uses simple logic. The point that I was trying to make is that if we do not know certain answers, simple as they may be, then we may want to establish that which is pure, but because we have some lacking, and the lacking is due to so much pride that we have, then whatever we establish is not going to help people. So we need to establish that which we have practiced and found to be practical. Now, not everything can be practically experienced unless and until we, you know, we climb up the stairs. That which can be experienced at the second level, the second floor, cannot be experienced from the ground level. So we need to have that faith to climb up the stairs. But with every stair, there has to be a realization, a practice that gives us realization with each step. And then from that step, when we offer our realization, that is helpful to people. So Bhagavad Dharma, the practice of religion has been established by the Vedic sciences, encourages people to follow religion of this kind. Practice and share. And Bhagavad Dharma points out that the real hurdle to trying to make progress in this way is ignorance and wanting to remain ignorant. Now, what is ignorance? Ignorance basically means lethargy to going towards light, towards enlightenment. So, ignorance is, simply put, the conception of I and mine are all important in this world. I am important and that which is mine is important. Now we think, or you know, even I think, that this is real knowledge. I know who I am and I know what I want. And who I am is basically limited to this 5'8" body, and to some extent 30, 40 or 50 years of whatever little information I've gathered through my own personal reading or interactions. There's another beautiful world that can be understood through the eyes of Krishna. In fact, the same world can be understood in such a wonderful, clear light through the eyes of Krishna. Mankind today does need that option. We need to have that option to have sight of what Krishna sees, or at least have understanding so that we can make the proper choices in life. Certain factors that will help us in tackling the anarthas that are there, or that which are hurdles, which all stem from basic ignorance of I and mine, the pride that's there. Basically false pride. Because what is I and what is mine for someone who exists only 60 or 80 or 100 years? Such a temporary existence. But when we or I speak of I and mine, it is such finality. So this is a challenge, this ignorance. This ignorance can be easily overcome. Certain factors to be considered are what we are going to mention now. First is perception. Rita and Anita were two friends, high school friends, who met after 20 years after they graduated from high school. So Anita turns to Rita and says, "So wonderful to see you, and I can see you're happily married. So are you married to Jay? I know you, both of you were going together in high school, so you're so close." She says, "No, I got married to, Jay was a wonderful person, but I didn't get married to him. I got married to Mark." "Mark? Who's he? And why?" And Rita says, "Very simple. Whenever I was with Jay, I felt I was with the most beautiful person in the world." "And then why didn't you marry him? I mean, when you feel that you're with the most beautiful person in the world, what else do you want?" She says, "No. But then I met Mark, and Mark made me feel that I was the most important person in the world. And that's why I married Mark. With Jay, I felt that he was the most important person in the world. And with Mark, I felt that I was the most important person in the world." Perceptions can make our choices really matter in life. So the perception that I am a part and parcel of God, as compared to I am the Lord and Master of all I survey, leads to choices that can make our life so different. Real consciousness is where we can perceive ourselves as being part and parcel of this creation and the Creator, and see that connection. This connection allows us to purify. Because when we see that connection, the senses, they are oriented in the proper direction. The compass of our life is pointing towards the north. All the other directions automatically set themselves. This is known as Sambandha Gyan. Knowledge that allows us one to not just realize the self, but see one's connection with the whole. And what is very exciting is, it also allows us to see the connection of the whole with the self. It's a two-way street. So proper perception is important. Proper perception can be had through proper hearing. One of the most powerful tools to good perception is, I'm not saying the only, but one of the most powerful tools to good perception is good hearing. Or hearing from a source that is proper. Now, there can be many doubts, you know, how do we know what is proper hearing? There are various criteria based on which we can judge. We have the intelligence, we use the intelligence to judge what is a good source and what is a good subject matter for hearing, and we do it. How does one retain what one has heard? Because retention, especially in today's age, is a big problem. So one of our spiritual teachers, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, gave an example. He said, clarified butter, which in India is known as ghee, has a very wonderful quality. He says, if a patient is ill with stomach ailment and the stomach is queasy, it cannot hold anything, whatever you eat immediately is sent through the intestines and it is passed out. So he says, give that person ghee or clarified butter to drink. And ghee is concentrated form of milk. Logic states that this should not be held by the stomach. And definitely the stomach is immediately going to pass it out. But ghee has a particular nature. Clarified butter has a particular nature. Its nature is that wherever it goes, it sticks. Some of it sticks. So part of that ghee would stick to the stomach lining, and over a period of time, constant drinking of ghee would allow sufficient to stick to the stomach lining and get absorbed and strengthen the muscles of the stomach. Therefore, proper hearing done constantly, something sticks. And then the muscles of the oral muscles become strong enough to absorb and retain. Now, how does one do constant? That requires sincerity. And for the moment one is engaged in the process of hearing, purity. Pure hearing. Focused hearing. With such proper hearing, when we have good perception, that brings us to the next step of practice. Then we get faith, or we get strength, we get motivation, we get the energy and the encouragement to practice what we have heard. This is known as sadhana. The word sadhana is very beautiful. It comes from this word sadhya, which means that which allows us to achieve our cherished goal. Sa adhi means entering into the lap of someone, you know, like a child enters the lap into the shelter of. So sadhana, sadhya, means like a child taking shelter of its parent, of its mother, loving mother. I'll just finish off, I'm 5 minutes late, finish off. Just 2 more steps, 3 actually. The next one is, sorry about that. Really, or should I stop? Is it all right if I take a few more minutes? Thank you so much. You're very kind. So practice is all of this is individual endeavor where we are, and to some extent when we are hearing, we are also opening ourselves to others. But this is not how things work. You know, one of my friends, when I was in college, he came up to me and said, there was this really, a male friend of mine in college. During our days, we had this beautiful lady who was like everyone's desire. This lady is so beautiful. So he said, you know what? I'm getting married to her. And the marriage is 50% confirmed. Like, we were shocked. Really, you're getting married to her? He said, yes. I mean, it's already 50% confirmed. He says, yeah, I have agreed to the marriage. That's 50%. Now, she has to do the other 50%. It can't work like that. Similarly, there's another step or another factor that is helpful. And that factor is prayers. Individual prayers where we completely offer ourselves helplessly for the mercy, for receiving the mercy of that whom we have faith in. But prayers also have another aspect. There's individual praying. A father had returned back home after a long battle, 20 years of battle, the father returns home. And after 20 years of battle, the man has seen so much that he comes back really questioning, having questions about life, about what this creation means. The son, in the meantime, has become very religious. So the son tells the father, "Father, please understand religion." And very zealous in his attempt to make his father understand. And the father said, "Son, I've seen so much, I don't know what to believe in." He says, "Father, the fact that you have returned from this arduous battle, you know, so many men haven't come back. You have come back. It is because the Lord has answered prayers." And the man said, "I never prayed." The son said, "I prayed every day. I prayed for you. And the prayers were answered." So prayers are very, very powerful. It's a very powerful tool. These four steps, especially the first three, perception, proper hearing, practice, brings forth realization. And especially prayers offered by our near and dear ones and our own sincere prayers fortifies that realization so much so that when it is there within our consciousness, we can't help but share it with others. And that is the fifth step, the fifth factor that helps us overcome the hurdles for a progressive consciousness. And that is what I call as present. Now present, I'm going to give two meanings of present. One is, which is based from the point of view of time, is the present time. Another understanding of present is a gift. So here, present is a gift. Someone has rightly said, past is history, future is a mystery, present is a gift. Therefore, it is called present. So when we have this presence, this present realization, it is but natural that we would like to share it with others. And the more we share a relation with others, the more we find some level of fulfillment. Especially when we see others also having their own realizations. So sharing with others. And finally, the sixth step is what I call as peers or personnel. Having a community that embodies that, the realizations that we have. Somewhere where we can come and feel at home, and somewhere where another traveler can find shelter. A strong community association of those who practice and have similar realizations. So, our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, he established so many different ways by which we can encourage each other to have a good community of sincere-minded practitioners, devotees who are practicing sadhana, a way of life, which allows us to taste a progressive realization of who we are as being part and parcel of Krishna, wanting to do service to Krishna, wanting to serve the creation of Krishna, seeing each other as beautiful, as a part of the family of Krishna. So the vision of Krishna takes predominance over the conception that I and mine is important. One of the ways of achieving this is through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Would anyone want to offer any comments? Any corrections? Thank you.